welcome to episode 126 of Talking Talkie podcast. I'm Stephen Dixon, your host today, and with me is Mr. Matt Parkman. How are we, Matt?
I'm very well, mate. Are you?
I am good. Yes, I am fine. Sunshine and showers this week is the main forecast. But moving on to the main event today, a Torquay United win. Do we call it rousing or not? I think might be up for discussion. But a 1-0 win for Torquay United over the weekend against St Albans. Matt, you were at the game. How did it go? What was the kind of feeling from the stands during the match?
It was a game of two halves. I'm going to kick off with a cliche for fun. It's a stereotypical game of two halves. We were very good in the first half. We got the ball wide. We got it forward, not too quickly, but quickly enough, with a bit of purpose. And then we got the ball in. The problem we had was that we were putting balls in for Ryan Jarvis, who was at home in Paignton, not in St Albans, which is a bit of a problem.
I think when you say Ryan Jarvis, you mean Aaron Jarvis?
I mean Aaron Jarvis. Oh, God, have I called him Ryan again?
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, Aaron Jarvis is a bit better than Ryan, but we'll roll with it. That's fine. We're happy to leave that in the edit, P. Don't worry about that.
He's only been here a year.
He's only Aaron our best Jarvis player.
Home. I don't know where Ryan Jarvis was. Unconfirmed reports that he was also at home in Paignton. I've no idea.
So just touching on that team sheet. So Aaron Jarvis was out with a dead leg. I have to admit, I had a few alarm bells in the back of my head that might be him angling for a move, or, you know, a dead leg can be a lot worse if you're trying to get your move back to the National League or otherwise. But Jarvis out with a dead leg. And I think I'm right in saying, Matt, that it was Ash and Collins up top. How did that work as a combination?
Not very well. But I'm not sold at all on this Brad Ash. He had one decent season last year where he scored a few goals, where he was like the only person scoring goals for Weymouth. I don't see anything in him. I don't think he had a chance on Saturday. I mean, the fact that our 18-year-old centre-back scored the goal, and it was a poacher's goal. He was where he needed to be to just prod the ball home, anticipating the goalkeeper dropping it. And it wasn't our centre-forward extraordinaire is going to get 30 goals on his own this season. It is a worry. And he just doesn't look threatening. He doesn't look interested to me, Brad Ash, or capable, really. That's probably a bit harsh, four games in. But like, it just doesn't look like he's... I mean, he might get three goals and then end up on loan at Truro or something. I think the last couple months of the season, where inevitably he'll score nine goals in nine games and keep them up or something, but doesn't do it for me.
No, to be honest, I haven't had that same negativity. I mean, have I been impressed? Not yet, not in the season anyway. But I thought against Chippenham, he didn't have a good game, but he showed flashes of some things. Like there were some nice little turns in there. But I think what's worrying is that, like you say, at Weymouth, he banged in the goals. And could I really say that he even had a clear-cut chance against Chippenham? I'm not sure he did. And for those kind of players where, okay, he's kind of quick, but he's not rapid and he's not a unit, you've at least got to have the speed of thought to be popping up in the right spots. And if you miss them, then that's okay. I can kind of make my peace with that, if as long as you're in the right spots. I mean, I'm talking about almost players like, if you go back to Lee Phillips kind of day,
yeah,
you'd say he wasn't particularly... That's not a direct comparison, because I know they're quite different in terms of styles, but he wasn't particularly quick, and he wasn't particularly big in terms of winning the ball, but he kind of popped up in the right spots and you felt like he could just lash it in. With Ash, I haven't seen enough of that yet. And I think Johnson has got a few eggs in that basket in terms of hoping that he does chip in with 15 to 20 goals this season. It hasn't looked like that's likely yet. But it's early days, I suppose, is what I'd say.
It's early days. I'm not writing him off. I'm not suggesting he's going to be, you know, hopeless. We need to move him on now and find a replacement. But he just hasn't done it for me yet. And I was kind of, maybe I was expecting too much, thinking, well, he's come with this good reputation, scored a lot of goals in this exact division last year, and is now in I don't care how bad we are, he's in a better team.
No, that's fair enough.
I was expecting him to already have at least, if not scored, looked a bit like scoring. And that's what's worrying me, is that he hasn't even really stung the palms of an opposing goalie as yet.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. So going back to that first half in St Albans, what went right? Obviously, Da Silva came into the starting lineup. Stobbs out wide right. I think, would you call it a traditional 4-4-2 from what you were watching from the stands?
I think it was, yeah. I'm not really all that big on formation. We were at the pub, and of course the team comes through, and I sort of, the bedfellow showed me, Tom Beddoes on his phone, and I'm looking down the team, and I'm sort of prodding my finger on the table as I read where I think everyone's going to play. And I think I'd listed about 3 defenders and 9 midfielders. And hang about, no way, that can't be right. It was in goal, a house-sitting goal, right? And I couldn't fathom it. So I was at a table with one or two guys who know much more about these sorts of things tonight. And I think we all agreed it was 4-4-2 in the end, which it did kind of seem to be. We did have a lot of width, which was nice. Silva, good. Stobbs, good out wide. Although, I mean, Stobbs had was put through on one occasion, really sort of good chance. He'd got away from his man. They seemed to be defending quite narrow. I don't know if they were in like a 5 and their wingbacks weren't tucking in or what, but they seemed quite narrow. So there was space out wide. Stobbs was put in. It's on the highlights. And he elected to pass rather than shoot. And ironically, the only way he was ever going to be able to get the ball to his teammate, I'm not sure who it was, it might have been Collins in the middle, was to play it off the goalkeeper. Like wall ball, if you remember that. Because there was a defender between the two Torquay players. So what he needed to do was shoot for the far post, a la the Spanish woman in the World Cup final, the game that we're potentially going to have to cover a bit later. But that was the only way he was ever going to get the ball to the Torquay man, because of where the defender was. So what he should have done is just got his head down, put his foot through it and aimed for the far post. If it goes in, it goes in. If it goes wide, well, all right, I'd rather you hit the target. The goalkeeper parries it, it's a tap in. So it was that little bit of decision making. I don't know whether that comes from a lack of confidence, because it was a clear chance.
Yeah, you wonder if it's a hangover from spending all that time at kind of right wing back. You don't naturally get through in those positions as often as you would if you're playing kind of wide, higher up the pitch. On Da Silva then, obviously it was a good first half. What kind of role did he play in his first start back for us? I have to admit, I come into the unconvinced camp with him. I realised, again, last week, the pop side were calling for Da Silva to come on early, and part of me sinks a little bit going, oh, this is the guy that we want to save us. But what was your take on his performance on Saturday?
Testament to where we are, isn't it, that Dylan Da Silva is a good option rather than a rubbish option. but in fairness to him, he played with chalk on his boots out on the left wing, and he was keen. He showed good touch. He was keen to run at his man. I don't know what St Albans, who are a lovely club, I should say. I like the ground. They've redeveloped the ground since we were last there. Friendly enough people. We had a nice time in the pub. Absolutely no qualms with them at all. Lovely place. But I don't know what they spend their money on. And my word, don't they seem to have a lot of money in St Albans. But it certainly isn't a lawnmower, because the grass was 2 inches long. It looks like if you forget to cut it maybe for a week or two, and then you go on a summer holiday for a fortnight and come back. And it looks like something out of, you know, undiscovered parts of the Amazon in your back garden. Well, it wasn't quite that bad, but it was not the, you know, 6/8 of an inch or whatever that we have ours at. It was 1.5, 2 inches long. So it wasn't an ideal pitch for him. It's very bobbly as well, because it's quite dry. But he tried pretty hard. He was fairly successful. Again, he didn't trouble their goalkeeper, but then nobody really did apart from our goal.
So from listening to that, I mean, you said that we were good in the first half. I was listening on the radio to this match, and obviously caught up with the highlights. But it sounded like we were on top without necessarily stinging the palms of the goalkeeper, if we can go back to that. I mean, I think it was something like seven corners in the first half, or, you know, a stupid amount of corners or something for Torquay. Like, did it feel like a goal was coming, or did it feel like another one of those days?
Yeah, it did without ever really being all sort of ooh and ah about it. Yeah. Oh, go out, ooh, ah. It wasn't like it was last time we were down here, where quarter of an hour in, we were either 5-0 up or we should have been 5-0 up.
Mm.
It wasn't quite the same as that, and it's obviously not how this season is going to go in comparison with that one. But yeah, we were in complete control. They had nothing at all in the first half, and there were several moments for us where we looked like a cohesive passing unit. We had a midfield, which we haven't had for a couple of games, where we've been going too direct up to whichever Jarvis it is that plays for us now. But we were getting it down, getting it wide, defending quite nicely. We had Donlan in the back four, which was not so reassuring. And your back four was somebody at left back, and then Ollie.
Was it Martin at left back?
So that was okay. Tomlinson, Marshall, Donlan, which does not fill me with any particular joy. But in fairness to all of them, they all did pretty well, to be honest.
That's the issue, though, isn't it? If you compare, I know it's very perhaps lazy to make these comparisons to the last time we were in this league, but if you compare that back line to the one we had last time we were here, it felt like we had more composure, I think, everywhere. I mean, I know Tomlinson obviously scored a goal in the weekend, but if you look at the last time we were in the Conference South, would Tomlinson get on the bench? Sendles White was our reserve defender. He's probably better than Tomlinson.
He probably is, yeah.
But that being said, what I've written in my notes here is second half, Ross Marshall morphs into prime Beckenbauer for last-ditch challenge. Is that how he played the whole game?
He was very, very good, Ross Marshall. He's been good. The games I've listened to, this is the first game I've seen, but I've seen the highlights and I've listened to the others. And I've seen, obviously, lots of the commentary online and that, and it seems like he's been really good, and he was very good. There was the one particular tackle, it makes the highlights real, but it's shown, because of where the camera is, it's shown from sort of the wrong angle from behind, so you don't get an idea of the quality of the challenge.
Mm.
He really got, because of the nature of the refereeing in this division and everything else, and the fact we were away and whatnot, he had to double win the challenge. He had to not just get a toenail on the ball and put it out for a corner, he had to get all the way around the striker, get his foot to put the ball out for a throw and then bring the guy down on his follow through, because he was in the box. So it would have been, it was 0-0 at that point. It would have been a disaster. So it was the first time really they got in a ball down the right. Guy made a break from our bloody corner, really.
Yeah.
Straight in. But no, the challenge that is on the highlights that you do see him jump in and make was really very, very good, and not something that I would have expected of Marsh. You know, he was one of last year's crop of he can definitely leave, and now, to be honest, he looked very composed. He was physical enough, he was in the right place plenty of times, he helped Halstead sort of deal with balls, that the odd ball that came through and everything else. So he had a very good game. I think he was probably my man of the match, Marshall. Okay. Very, very good.
I think to his credit, I don't think there were many people at Playmore last season who wanted Marshall to stay, I think. But to his credit, I say to his credit, I'm about to go into another negative, but he made some very silly errors last season. And I think for me, looked more than anything to not to have the mentality to be a, you know, standard National League defender. What I can say to his credit is that I think he's a defender who enjoys defending, which is a good thing. And I think you could see that in those kind of tackles that he makes. I think he likes making like those last ditch challenges. I think what hopefully will improve for him this season, if we are more dominant, is that there's less opportunities for those lapses in judgment and you know, less chances for him to fuck it up himself if we're under the cosh. You know, and he can kind of take that more leadership role if he's got someone like Tomlinson next to him and kind of all of them around and hey, let's defend, let's keep some clean sheets. I mean, God knows we've needed that over the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, just somebody out there to be a steadying influence. Your Guy Branston to your Mark Ellis, for example, from all those years ago. You know, there was the manager, go out and enjoy it, but by enjoy it by being fucking disciplined. And
absolutely,
that's exactly what Marshall did. They had, we let them have, I mean, I say they had, we did very much let them have 90% of the ball second half, but they had 90% of that in their own half. We didn't care.
I was going to say, so what, that second half performance, did we stop pressing? What was the change from us?
They didn't threaten us, so we became less intent on trying to press them really high up, and they kept playing out from the back. They wouldn't launch it long, which might actually ironically have caused us more problems if they stopped trying to pass it around. They just knocked it around at the back, really, because they didn't have a huge amount of movement up front, and the movement they did have was being cancelled out by pretty good defending, so without the ball, marking the space and everything else. So we did that quite neatly. They did press onto us very late on, of course, 1-0 down. They had scrambles and whatnot. We were panicking a bit. But, I mean, really, I don't... Halstead made one. He came out about 30 seconds into the second half. Their guy got in a very similar position to Stobbs, had got in the first half, and he tried to pull his shot, and Halstead came out really nicely and sort of smothered the shot, put it out for a corner. And then 2 minutes later, they had a ball in from the right that their number nine, somehow big guy, got. He was front and centre, probably, I don't know, 10 or 12 yards out.
Yeah, I was going to say, he was about penalty spot, wasn't he?
Got his toe under it, and he hit the roof of the stand behind the goal. I mean, damn, you've got to hit a toe. Just close your foot. I know it's easy for me to say. Like, just close your foot and guide it back into the corner where it's come from. Halstead is going to have to be coming from near post to far post, so his weight's got to be going that way. He's just put it back the other side of him, roll it in. You could trickle it in, and he's not going to get back to it. So that really was the only time they looked anything like scoring. We were very happy. I think maybe we went a little bit to pieces with some of our passing when we got some of the changes. We made some substitutes to Silver off. He had cramp. We bought McGavin on. Not great. So we did a little bit lose some of the composure we'd had earlier on. But again, really, without they had all the ball without doing anything with it.
My worry is that, okay, you said we had a good first half, but our goal was from a corner, Tomlinson stabbing it in. A player, I think, even coming into the season, a lot of us were probably hoping he might be a backup. And he might still be with the loan window still going. But yeah, my worry is that, did they create the biggest chance with that striker? Like, in terms of actually prizing open his team, their striker blazing over from about 10 yards out, you know, was that the biggest chance of the game? And we never really prized them open in that way?
We did miss a few other chances. I think most of them are on the highlights. Sort of shots that went narrowly wide, just over the bar, once deflected, that actually wasn't going. Looked like it was going in from our end because we were shooting the wrong way. So they were at the far end first half. But it looked like it was going in, and it wasn't in the end on the highlights, but the goalie didn't know that. And one or two others. I mean, we probably had the three or four best chances apart from that one chance they had the very best chance in the game, and really the rest of the meaningful chances belong to us, which is sort of okay. It's funny, actually, you should mention the loan window, because Johnson said after... in his post-match comments about, it very specifically said, we've got four loan spaces left. And once the window closes for the league, which is September the 1st, I think, maybe.
Yes, I think so.
1st of September, then he'll work out which of the options that he's looking at. Obviously, they've got a shortlist. You know, him and Peter, like, they always have two or three ideas for every position. So yeah, they'll work.
Whatever Pete's doing.
The man who identified Armani Little and all that. Actually, it was St Albans that year where I saw Pete. It was our last away game of the season. I saw Pete and said hi, and we were talking about some of the players. And he said, "Go, you think you like these? You just wait until you see the midfielder we've got lined up for you next year." And I tried to get him to give me any kind of hint, and he said, no, but you simply won't believe it. And the midfielder he had lined up was Armani Little. That was a deal we'd already done. I don't know if I'm getting this in trouble now, like tapping up players or whatever, but
yeah.
That I think was a deal that was already over the line, even by St Albans away that year. So like, he obviously can identify a player. It's just a question of if the purse strings are sufficiently loose and what the deal is. I mean, I've been saying for the last, however long it's been, 6-8 weeks, that you don't play Southampton under-21s in your last pre-season game unless your intention is to have a look at...
Absolutely.
Southampton. Because what sort of game is that? Why would you play Plymouth and Exeter and Newport, whoever we play?
Absolutely.
And then an under-21 side makes no sense.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think... And there were a couple of standout performers in that. That striker... I meant actually to look up, see, do a bit of reading and see on their website maybe if any of them have gone out on loan already or whatever. But there was the striker who had a name that I think people were really struggling to pronounce.
Yeah, let's just leave it at that. The long-named striker, yes.
The long-named striker. And there was a defender as well, centre-back, who I think did...
Yeah.
I remember at the time thinking, right, with this in mind.
Yeah, I think that was Roland Huth.
Ronald Huth. Geez.
Oh, was it? I forgot what his name was.
Roland, yeah. Brock, I don't know, it's one of them.
Yeah, no. Let's touch on that on the loan market, because I think it's fair to say the start of the season in its most generous term, let's call it steady. I said it's most generous. Let's leave it at that. Positionally, where do you think Johnson? I mean, let's say he's got those four loan spots, and from the way he was talking, like you say, it sounded like he very much sees those as places he wants to fill. You know, and we know from working with Johnson through the years, he likes to have a fair amount of loanees or on board, or at least experiment with a few and with a view of getting them into the squad. What positions do you think he's looking at in terms of, yeah, you know what, for a decent title challenge, we've got to be strengthening these areas?
We need a number 10, don't we? We need a Conor Lemon-Hay-Evans, and we need another striker. Everybody, there were a few of us at the pub beforehand, that the team sheet came out, and of course everybody gets it up on their phone, and the same murmur goes around the whole beer garden: no threat off the bench. Our bench was a sub goalie, McGavin,
Hanson.
I mean, they're not
Callum Thomas and Dylan Crowe.
You tell me. We bought Crowe on for Dylan De Silva, and you think Dylan De Silva's bad? Well, then there's whatever Crowe's first name is, Crowe. Hanson and McGavin.
That's the thing. On that bench, Crowe is the best attacking threat. Exactly. And that's not because we've seen him have any attacking threat. It's because we all think he's quite quick and should be okay, even though he's never really shown us on any kind of level.
The best goal he's ever scored is the own goal at Oldham away from a yard, where inexplicably on his own, he blasted it into the back of his own net, front and centre of...
I mean, to be honest, he cuts the figure of a man who doesn't want to be here anymore. I wouldn't be surprised if, when the shuffling of the pack happens in terms of loanees, that Dylan Crowe... I realise he's obviously contracted for this year, but I wouldn't be surprised if there was a way of, shuffling him out the door.
I mean, in fairness... Gabby Rogers was on a 3-year deal, and the same happened to him. Loan window opened for us, closed for everyone else, opened for us. And, you know, out he went, despite the fact that we were contracted for him. And it's happened with a couple of others as well. Niate in Johnson's second season, his first full season, we all said he was the one we were umming and ahhing about. Will Johnson keep him? Will he not? And we kept him over the summer, and then he went. So I think we've got a bit of form, or Johnson's got a bit of form for doing that kind of thing. And I can see him
To be honest, if you're Hanson now, I've been fairly unimpressed with Jenkins Davies, despite Argyle fans are raving about him. And he might still come good. I think the only background hope for me is that he gets used to the kind of full-time professional men's game. I mean, professional in inverted commas. but and gets used to it. But he looked thoroughly ineffective against Chippenham. I mean, looked lightweight, didn't want to get stuck in at all. The comparison some of my mates were making were like, oh, hopefully he's a bit like Unan O'Kane, you know, starts a bit lightweight, but comes good. But even when Unan started, he was willing, like, okay, he was our creative force, but he stuck a foot in. He knew that that's what you had to do at this level. And Jenkins Davies looks so lightweight at the moment. And I think in a midfield two, okay, Lapsley will do your grunt work, fine. But if you're playing in a midfield two, you need someone else who's also going to do some grunt work. So my worry is that I think he wants to be a 10, I think, and float around the pitch, you know, taking up nice positions. But you've got to be much more disciplined than that. Enjoy it by being fucking disciplined, like you said.
We're back again to that same thing. It's, you mentioned Unan, and you're right too, but Unan had Dame on the throat behind him. He had Lansom next to him, Tom Lapsley, but he also had Damon Lathrope behind him in front of a decent back four.
Mm.
That is what we're asking Jenkins Davies to be, both Lathrope and Unan.
Yeah.
And he so far can't. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt because
he's
19 or whatever he is. This is his first taste of senior football. And Paulie B turned to me in the second half and he said, you can tell he's only ever played the under levels, you know, the youth levels, if you like, of football. He's never played in the ultra, because that step up, I've not been an under 21 or a pro, but you know full well that step up.
Mm.
You see sometimes when they're ultra gifted, you get precocious 13-year-olds playing in the under 16s or even the under 17s because their physical limitations are cancelled out by their immense talent.
Mm.
But then under 21s up to first team, no quarter asked or given. And there's just no way of simulating that step up apart from simply dropping someone into it. So 4 games in, I'm going to forgive Jenkins for not being brilliant and hope that, like Adam Randell, he gets better and better and better and better. And by the end of the season, we're going, oh my God, can you imagine if we signed this guy permanent for the National League next year?
Because I mean, and you look at Randall now, he's a starting Championship central midfielder. And so I in fairness, if Johnson's starting him, he obviously, I mean, it's probably not saying much, but he obviously prefers him to McGavin and Hansen, as I said, it's not saying much, but it is something. And it feels weird because those 4 loan slots, I was thinking about it myself. Who would I want? I want another striker. I'd probably want another centre-half. And it feels ridiculous to say, given the amount of central midfielders we have on the books, I'd still want another central midfielder. Because he clearly doesn't fancy Hansen. McGavin, I still so want him to do well. But it's not happening, is it? It's not happening.
The only hope I think that McGavin has got is Hall. I think Hall's career is potentially over now, given the nature of this injury, the severity of it, and but it's going to be January before he's fit.
Is that what they've said? Is it for Hall?
It's not official, but he's done ankle ligament damage that, what is he, 36, 37?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he's not going to be a week out. And even if he does come back, it's going to take him forever to get fit. Does he get his place back automatically?
Yeah.
Probably not, you know. So I do wonder if McGavin will benefit from that and he will be kept on just because we don't have Hall anymore and Hansen and maybe Crowe are two that then are moved aside and loanies are bought in and hopefully they're a success. Because if they're not, well, we're in... I think we probably are in trouble, to be honest, because our best 11's probably good enough, but all of the reserves at the minute are probably not.
No, and to be honest, my worry is that last season, okay, we ended the season well, and we had a decent first 11 at the end of last season, but it took Johnson a hell of a lot of time. We rolled through a lot of loanees, I suppose is what I'm trying to say, before we found the ones he wanted. Or the ones that could actually legitimately contribute. We've rolled through a lot. We can't afford that this season. The ones he gets now have to be the ones that contribute. And they have to contribute straight away, really, because in this league, a team can just run away with it. I mean, we were lucky enough that Woking choked last time we were in here. But Yeah, it is more competitive, I think, than the last time we were here, and it's more competitive, and I don't think we're quite as good at the moment, which is okay, but it is what it is.
Yeah, we're nowhere near as good. I mean, that first, give it, I don't know, not Johnson's first game, but 8 weeks in, when he's got things sorted, he'd moved some of the Deadwood out and got his own guys in. That team beats this team 99 times out of 100, and comfortably as well. Just cuts through. Well, you know, but it was the wide man, Ben
Winter?
Ben Whitfield.
Oh, Whitfield.
Dylan De Silva. I mean, like, that's just the ultimate no-brainer, isn't it? And man for man, everywhere over the pitch, we are worse now than we were then. There's not a single player in this. Maybe Aaron Jarvis, maybe he gets in the side, but I don't know.
With the way Janna...
Probably not ahead of Saiku Janna, I shouldn't
think. I was going to say, the way Janna and Reedy linked up, you wouldn't...
He'd be on the bench. You know, but the rest don't get anywhere near the squad, nowhere near it. So, that's the best talking squad I've ever seen. So, you know, we're a lot worse off than we were then. We aren't going to be steamroller in the division. We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens against Slough on Saturday.
Well, you've segued it for me, Matt, haven't you? Away at Slough on Saturday. Slough have had if we called ours a sluggish start, theirs is even sluggisher. There's some good English for you. Played four, lost three, one win on the board. They've lost to Maidstone, Dover and Worthing. Who would ever lose to Worthing? Stupid honestly. Mugs. But weirdly, they pumped in the weekend. They pumped Western Supermare 3-0. So, an interesting match, I think. What's your take on it? Looking ahead to Slough,
I think they were widely tipped. Even the Dover commos. I listened to the Dover game, where obviously we had to have Radio Kent because they've only got one plug socket apparently in the entire ground. Pre-season chatter was that Slough were going to finish 23rd. If Dover were going to finish 24th, Slough were going to finish 23rd, not far ahead of Dover. So the fact that they've done quite badly so far doesn't really surprise me. The guy they have signed, he's got the goals, he got a hat trick. That's why they won 3-0. George Alexander is back on loan from Bromley. And he got all three goals on Saturday in a 3-0 win. So he's looking down his goals record, it's quite amusing because he doesn't tend to play more than three or four games in any given season, but he'll play three games and get seven goals.
Terrific. This feels like a Ross Marshall leveler incoming.
Yeah, I think someone will be siding him down pretty early on. Yeah. If you think Brad Ash gets rough treatment, you know, this guy is going to get kicked over. So he's back. That's why they won. Interestingly, they've scored in all four of their games. They've lost 2-1, 2-1, 3-1, and then won 3-0. So I think it's pretty much a given the way that we defend, that they will score. So we're going to hope that Jarvis is back. As I understand it, Jarvis is due to be back. He wasn't that bad a dead leg. He was kind of 50-50 to play on Saturday, so he should be fine for Slough. And so I'm kind of hopeful that we simply have more goal threat. But if you're of a Jules Nixon persuasion and you like the over 2.5 goals thing online, however that works, then I think this is probably a game to have on your list.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that. And I'd heard the same whispers. I mean, Slough finished 18th last term, but I think we're down there for a lot of the season, from by all accounts. And like you say, I think strongly tipped for the drop. So really, as Johnson himself said in midweek that you want to be trying getting 2 points out of every game, and then you'll be somewhere towards 90 points. In order to do that, you've got to be beating teams away that are like Slough. So it's early days, I know, four games in, but I think we've got to be trying to win it. I think, like you say, our best method of winning it is opening it up a bit and just going, look, fuck it. You score three, we'll score four. And hope that, you know, Ash and Jarvis and Collins. Because, I mean, on paper, there are some goal threats up there. It just hasn't quite clicked yet to that proper, you know, way we'd like it to. But, yeah, hopefully something can come together. I'd imagine he'll go with a similar shape than what we saw in the weekend. Try and open it up a bit and get a few goals on the board, hopefully.
Yeah, no one was hurt, I don't think, on Saturday. The changes we made were long grass, heavy pitch, warm day related. Dylan Silva went off after an hour with cramp. I mean, madness, but he did. I think if we got Jarvo back, you drop whoever you drop. Maybe Collins, even if you've got the Dan Martin now coming in at left back, maybe Collins drops to the bench, a bit of a threat later on, and then put Jarvis up front. And if we can get some kind of service to him from out wide, from each side, you know, we saw at Maidenhead last year, you put a quality ball into the box and he will head it in.
That's what I think. I hope he stays with the 4-4-2 because I think he'd thrive in it a bit more. I mean, just look again, watching that highlights package, it just felt like so many balls were kind of chipped in, hopefully. And it, rather than Dylan De Silva on the end of it trying to angle a weird header in off his square shaped head, you know, you need someone like Bradley Ash who's actually going to attack the ball. Aaron Jarvis is actually going to attack the ball. Who knows what Bradley Ash is going to do?
Just be nice to see involved, to be honest.
I have no idea what Ash would do with it. I hope we stick with those wide wingers. Let's get some crosses in. I mean, to be honest, against Chippenham, it was a... I know we won the game, but it was a bit of a wake-up call for me as a fan. I just felt like we haven't got a way that we want to attack. We were pumping these balls forward in the hope that, you know, some knockdowns off Jarvis happen. And they kind of do a bit. I mean, Jarvis is fairly good at holding the ball, but it wasn't a plan. You know, it wasn't a plan of attack. It wasn't... There wasn't a proper system. Whereas I think let's do what we know we can do. To Johnson's credit, he has recruited some pacier players who can play out wide. Stobbs can deliver a ball. De Silva is the kind of opposite of that in that he can't deliver a ball, but sometimes he can. And will run at people. And yeah, let's open it up. And that's at least a plan of action. Because again, players like Dan Martin will run all day overlapping people. So, it feels like that's the logical way forward for us this season. Because what I saw against Chippenham didn't feel like we'd had a kind of cohesive strategy other than hoping to press a little bit and hoping that they'd make a few errors. It came okay, obviously, because we beat Chippenham, but it wasn't a good game. You got me complaining there. Score predictions for Slough in the weekend. What are you thinking, Matt?
I think it will be a 2-2 draw. Sorry.
He's gone for his goals. I will go for a 2-1 win to the Mighty Yellows. I can't see us keeping a clean sheet, like you say. Hopefully we can kick the crap out of this guy who scored a hat-trick in the weekend and go from there. Then on Bank Holiday Monday, yes, that's right, folks. It's a bank holiday. It's at home to Braintree, who have played four and have 4 points, one win and one draw in there. We'll just touch on this briefly, Matt, but looking at those kind of fixtures as a whole, again, Braintree haven't started that well. It currently sat 18th in the table. But another one, I think, at home that Johnson really needs to be hoping to get the 3 points out of.
You'd think so, wouldn't you? I mean, it's so hard to know. I don't know. It's probably part of my job as being on the podcast to know these things, but I don't know anything about these fucking clubs because I never thought we'd be playing these Mickey Mouse clubs again.
I almost introduced this section by saying now's the time for us to pretend we've done all our research about these clubs. But yeah, I'm still depressed that we're here
I don't know. I refuse to look at the other score. I open flash scores at half time and I go, I don't really care what's happening in the Premier League. I think a toss about Liverpool versus Barnsley or whoever in the Premier League these days. I can't look at the National League because that's just depressing. And I refuse to give a shit about what's happening in the National League North or South. So what I do is I open my phone, I open flash scores, Yeah, no, close flesh. Always put your phone back in your pocket and do something else. But I don't know. Braintree, they're from Essex. So, I mean, a convoy of white XR2Is will turn up, and some men who had their teeth redone in Turkey somewhere will emerge.
Terrific.
In clothing.
Probably. We don't speak in generalizations on this pod.
Yeah, no, look, it's not that I'm stereotyping, but 11 plasterers will turn up, and what will happen will happen. What's going to fuck knows? I don't know.
Oh,
they're drawn with Dover. Try at least and have a sensible look at what they've done. They're drawn with Dover, which, as we know, all the best teams do. They've beaten Truro. So again, they're another team. They've scored in all four of their games. So it looks kind of maybe as though there are goals floating around in this division. And I'm going to say we're going to beat them 4-3.
4-3. Fucking 4-3. Hell. What a
plain more thriller.
A plain more thriller. I'll go for a 1-1 disappointing home draw for that one. But yeah, it's Johnson said after the game in the weekend that if we beat Slough, it's then 5 games, 10 points. And that's what he used as his justification for saying, look, what you want is 2 points every game. And then you're up there at the end of the season. I think he's doing that, I think, as a, you know, a bit of PR almost to try and say to Torquay fans that it doesn't matter that we're sat in 10th at the moment. Granted, it hasn't been a start to the season as bad as under ours. But we all know Johnson needs to start the season well. Two wins on the bounce is good. Now we need a couple of convincing ones, really, I think, as far as I'm concerned.
There's no one in this division that, I mean, maybe you'd say Yeovil because it came down, but I mean, they were rubbish last year.
They were rubbish.
And they were rubbish all year. Unlike us, we were rubbish for the first two-thirds of the year, and then we were actually quite good for the last 8 or 10 games. Whenever we had a lot of the squad we've got now, we got much better. Yeovil were just shit all year.
Mm.
They were third from bottom from about October until the last of the season.
And then I'm only gonna throw you this question because I think it'll be a good one to have while you're on the pod. What are you making of Yeovil's owner on Twitter? Have you seen much of him? I'm just like, that's just like throwing a grenade in.
Bloke's a lunatic, isn't he? I mean, like, I am not the most reserved or
yeah, I think you could say that. Yeah.
Twitter user. I call a spade a spade, and I call an arsehole online. But I mean, this guy is just taking it up to another level. I mean, arguing with other... I've always wondered what kind of chairman I'd be. I used to stand quite near Simon Baker when the consortium had us.
I'm sorry. You're much more Clark Osborne.
No, absolutely, I'm not. No. I used to stand quite near Simon Baker. And I always used to kind of think, yeah, if I owned a football club, if I owned Torquay, I also would wear my posh trousers and my suit and whatever else and go and press the flesh with visiting dignitaries and whatever else. But then 2 minutes to kick off, I'd get a shirt out of my bag, put it on over my suit and then go and stand where I stand on the pop side because that's how I enjoy football. But as it goes on, I do wonder maybe if that's a little bit, maybe as I get older, I sort of adopt a more Sam Dariff type approach of sort of quite formal in everything and whether I'd be in some sort of ceremonial dress every Saturday to ensure that I looked the part as an owner. But then I remember that we have a plan if we do ever win the Euro Millions to go and collect the money at Playmore, but all dressed up in fancy dress. So really, I have no idea what kind of owner I'd be, but I tell you what owner I wouldn't be. I wouldn't be the kind of owner who gives it mouth on Twitter.
And to be fair, I mean, let's throw mud. You probably wouldn't be the type of owner that's constantly trying to redevelop the ground with nowhere for the club to go either. So let's call a spade a spade.
Yeah, exactly. You know, promising, what we need is a hotel and an entertainment area and a 4G. Well, fuck off and build those things somewhere else then. Absolutely no one is going to stop you, Mr. Osborne, building a hotel with a swimming pool and a climbing wall and a fucking petting zoo if you want, but fuck off and build it somewhere else.
Wow, this is fruity, which is, P's got that bleep button ready, which does lead me to actually plug the Tust pod which Sam Drewiff did with an interview with Tust. So feel free to go back and listen to that. They touched on all things club related. Tust have released a statement on how they're how they're working with the club, but more how they're not working with the club. So well worth a listen with that, with Sam Drewiff having a chat with Tust there. So feel free to go back to that. What I will say now is, any other business, Matt Parkman, have you got anything else I should be touching on? Do you want to talk Women's World Cup? How was it for you?
I was kind of okay. I really like women's football.
I genuinely say this as a man who, look, all cards on the table, I haven't watched a lot of women's football. Okay, that is what it is. The standard has improved so much, so even from 10 years ago, I've been into this World Cup basically, and some of the games have been quality. I mean, there's still some dodgy goalkeeping around, but you get that at any level. And I mean, if I'm honest, I found that final a bit of a damp squib. It wasn't a good final, but what you could say, it wasn't a good final because of bad quality football. Spain managed the game quite well. England just couldn't get through it. I mean, but it is what it is. You see that at all levels of football.
Yeah, the quality that women produce now is just outwith anything that I've been watching for ages. I mean, I went along to the, it's a different standard, obviously, but I went along to quite a few of Torquay women's when we first got the women's team. And I mean, they were, you know, decent, but it was very obviously amateur football. But watching professionals now, I don't live that far from Leeds Sports Village, so I can go and watch Man United women. And the standard that they can produce now, club level, is just ridiculous. You say about goalkeeping, but I mean, there's a reason Mary Earps is the world's best goalkeeper.
Exactly.
In the unlikely event any Nike executives are watching, you can join Mr. Osborne on Titan 2 anytime you like. I have absolutely no interest in hearing from any of you. There are millions of people who want to buy a Mary Earp shirt, and they deserve to be able to, regardless of whether it will cost your executives $100,000 or office bonus or whatever. Nobody cares. Make the shirt.
Yeah.
Remarkable. Gutted for the women. It didn't feel the same as if England, as when we got the men got to the Euro final, it felt different. And I think that's right, because they're different games. It felt different to me about seeing England in a World Cup final from women as men, not any less exciting, but it did feel different. And I was just kind of a bit numb at the end. And
yes.
I was out, I was walking the dog about 11 p.m. or 10:45 last night. And I said to Peel, I really liked it 12 hours ago when we hadn't lost a World Cup final, when I hadn't seen England lose a World Cup final. And I was, you know, it's just, you know, going into the game, that someone, unless it's 0-0 and it goes to penalty, but you know, someone is going to, by the end of this game, have scored a goal in a World Cup final.
Yeah.
Half the people in the stadium and on the pitch and on the benches and that are going to be World Cup winners, which is the ultimate penalty of any football. And it just happened that this time it was the Spanish who've come out on top. But you know, absolutely no disgrace to England women being the European champions.
And to be honest, watching the game, second best on the day. I mean, Spain were a very good team, and I mean, if England had managed to scrape an equaliser, I think there's an argument that it would have been undeserved, given.
Yeah, I mean, what did we do? Lauren James forced her goalie into that one save up to her right. Really, that kind of was it. She was forced into saving a penalty, and I still think she was off her line, but VAR.
I thought she was off her line too, but yeah, doesn't matter now. Goes down in the history book.
Ancient history now. And to be honest, she didn't deserve, it was a Mickey Mouse handball, so I don't think you should be allowed to.
That's true.
Take of something like that.
I genuinely, as a man who plays football, I like, what the hell is the handball rule these days? I was watching it, I was like, well, people have hands what do you want them to do with them? Hands exist. I don't, yeah.
That's one of those where when I'm head of the PGMOL somehow, it's going to be a free kick in the box. Penalties are going to be vanishingly rare. Because you can't have, if you're going to keep reviewing things like offside, it needs to be umpire's decision with offside. Because if you can get down to billionths of an inch, the rule was never designed for that level of accuracy. The rule came with an inbuilt, oh, it's close enough, o-meter, because linesmen are fallible. They're fallible to half an inch even.
The only question I've got about that is, because I've heard you talking about this online as well, but then you just change where you measure. Because, what you know, okay, you give yourself an error bar of I don't know, let's call it 10 centimetres. But, you know, there's still the edge of that 10 centimetres. You're going to have to measure really finely.
If you're, I mean, make it 10 centimetres. I mean, I'd make it wider than that. I'd make it 9 inches or whatever that is in euros. But, you know, even if you say it's a foot, it's a really big chunk of distance. It's 30 centimetres a foot.
Yeah, but even then you're...
Yes, but if you are 2 millimetres offside, I'm 2 millimetres, like it hasn't been... If I'm a foot and 2 millimetres offside...
Yeah, okay.
Then, you know, that's my own fault. But what
we've got
is blokes, you know, oh, he's leaning one way, he's leaning the other, his leg is bent, so his knee is offside, making absolutely no difference. If you're a foot and a millimetre offside, well, that's your fault.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. That makes sense. I don't know how you're going to spin this in your future life to be chairman of Torquay United and president of the PGMOL, but we'll see how it goes from here. Anything else you want to raise on any other business, Matt?
No. Sensibly, I don't think there is, which is probably an oversight. There'll probably be the guys in the next pod on whenever this is next week, will probably be going, we're really sorry, we completely forgot to mention. Oh no, there is something. Tom Vosper, our friend Tom Vosper, he does a charity football match or charity football tournament every year in honor of his late father, and that was last weekend. So we'll put the details of that up on Twitter if you want to throw a few quid in to battle cancer, to help human beings end the scourge of cancer around the world. Feel free to do that, throw that in there. Thank you, Tom, for excellent arrangement and everything else.
Okay, that seems like as good a note to end on. So thanks for joining us, Matt.
Thank you very much, Stephen. I've thoroughly enjoyed spending an hour in your company.
Said no one ever, and thank you very much, everyone else. Cheers.